5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this. So you know how you're always, I don't know if you've ever done it on the mic, but you definitely do it off the mic.
Okay.
Slagging us Brits.
Yes. On and off the mic, of course, yeah.
You know, you've said in the past we've been evil and...
Mm-hmm. Well, historically speaking, the Brits aren't the best.
Well, historically speaking, I can tell you, but we wasn't. I'm going to draw...
Weren't the best, or you're saying that like...
No, we were the best. But historically speaking, we wasn't evil.
Okay.
Now, bear with me, but I'm going to drop a massive bombshell here.
Mm-hmm.
So you know back in day, everyone used bow and arrow?
Yeah, back in day, yeah.
Yeah. So then in Europe, when the crossbow was first made, French were using them, Spanish were using them.
And they refused to use them because they were too barbaric.
Yes. Mm. They were saying it was inhumane because you didn't need any skill, well, less skill, to use a crossbow than a bow and arrow. So to go into war, knowing you're going up against people using crossbows, but for humanity, you're just stuck to your bow and arrow.
I see your bow and arrow argument, and I'll raise you.
So anyway, what are we covering today?
Today we're going to take a look at the case of Robert Maudslay. Are you familiar, Neil? From your neck of the woods, sort of.
Sheffield?
No, just north of England.
See,
rounding up. That always annoys you. Liverpool, specifically.
Okay, Liverpool is not my neck of the fucking woods.
That's only about an hour away from you. I understand.
An hour? What, you in a Concorde?
Oh, sorry, how far away is Liverpool?
About 2 1/8.
Do you know what's so funny about that? To us, that's like, oh, it's just, it should have its ages away. To an American, it's like, it's down the road.
Yeah, I have this argument with people in America all the time.
Mm.
You know, they'll be like, I'm going to a podcast convention or I'm going to see a haunted house. And I'll be like, oh, how far is it? Ah, it's not far. It's only like 6 hour drive. It's like...
Are you fucking kidding me?
You do realise Ireland, I could drive from one end to the other in 3 hours. Three and a half.
Ish.
Yeah,
ish.
Three and a half.
But I wonder, is it like... Right, so if you're in the UK, yeah?
Well, I'm not, but yeah.
But if you were.
Hmm.
You've done it before when you've driven from, was it Sheffield or was it Leeds, up to the far end of Scotland?
Sheffield to Inverness.
Yeah, which is the far end, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's their coast.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That took you nine and a half hours?
9 hours.
But that's insane, given the size of the land.
Hmm. I just remember when I had to drive to Inverness and it took 9 hours The bloke I was driving for a company to deliver some goods to a shop. He wanted me to drive to Inverness, deliver, and drive back. I was like, absolutely fucking not. There is no way. I was like, if you want me to deliver to Inverness, you're paying for accommodation.
Mm.
And he didn't put me in a hotel. He put me in...
Premier Inn?
No, it was like a pub with rooms above it.
No, I'm not very comfortable with that. It's too personal. It's too like a person's home, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Hmm.
I want the kind of an anonymity.
Actually, sorry. Speaking of staying in pubs, I've stayed in a pub before, and I didn't know when we covered it. I didn't know. I couldn't remember the name. Noose and Gibbet
in West Yorkshire.
Gibbet, South Yorkshire.
Gibbet.
It was in Sheffield. It was across the road from Sheffield Arena.
Oh.
Noose and Gibbet.
There you go.
There's the Gibbet. Gibbet.
It's always going to be Gibbet, I think. It's always. We've done the damage now.
So, what did Bobby do?
Robert Maudsley.
No.
Not ringing any bells?
No.
Well, I'm not entirely surprised because, although it is somewhat known, given what he did, it's not... He's technically a serial killer.
Okay.
But what
you can say it's technically not bad.
No. But when we get into it, you'll see why. Like, I'll mention why it didn't get the notoriety as maybe another case would have.
Okay.
Robert John Maudsley was born on the 26th of June 1953 in Liverpool. He was the fourth child born to parents George and Jean Maudsley. His father was a lorry driver, but I couldn't find much information on his mother. At the age of just 6 months old, Robert, along with his three older siblings, Paul, Kevin and Brenda, were taken into care due to parental neglect.
Well, lorry driver is never home. My father, he was a wagon driver. He drove Arctics.
No, this wasn't just they weren't very present. It was full on neglect.
Okay.
Robert and his siblings would spend their time in care at Nazareth House, which was a Catholic orphanage run by nuns. Now, I know what you're thinking, but it wasn't like that. This was said to... Sorry. I get that Catholic orphanage doesn't always have the best associations.
Yeah.
But this was said to have been the happiest time of Robert's childhood.
That's sad.
What?
That's sad.
It is, yeah.
Your happiest time is in an orphanage.
Yeah, it was said when he was there, he had bonded with his siblings, as well as the other children there and the nuns who took care of them.
Hmm.
The kids were said to have been happy, healthy, and to have thrived there. So, like you said, it's kind of sad that that was their happiest time as opposed to with their parents.
Yeah.
But at least they were happy, you know. Now, a few years down the line, his parents reappear to take back their four children. Apparently, someone wanted to adopt one of Robert's brothers, which the biological parents had to be informed of. And when they were told, they were just kind of like, no, we'll take him back.
Can you do that? They've been taken off you for a reason.
Apparently. Maybe someone didn't file the correct paperwork. I don't fucking know what the sus is.
That's Liverpool. Back then, they wouldn't have even discovered the fire.
In the years that the four children had been in care, their parents had another eight children.
Fucking hell!
Mm-hmm. Now, when Robert's parents showed up to take him and his siblings home, it was strange for them, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
These people were strangers to them. Bear in mind, Robert was 6 months old when he was put into care.
Yeah.
At this point in their lives, those at the orphanage were the only family they knew. Robert said, "As I understood at the time, the nuns were my family and the other children. And here's a man and a woman that call themselves my mother and father, coming to take me away, and I never really knew them. Well, I resented that, but I was forced and I went back home." Which is just so horrible to think of, you know?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, things would only get worse from here. Now back in his parents' home, Robert was subjected to horrific abuse at the hands of his father. All of these children suffered, but Robert seemed to receive the brunt of the abuse from his father. And he really, really seemed to have it out for him. Now, as far as I'm aware, it also seems that Robert took a lot of the beatings to save his siblings from receiving them. At one point, Robert recalled how his father had stripped him naked. And this was, like I was saying here, the neglect that they faced. It was literally bare minimum.
Yeah. It's more to belittle.
Yeah, like they would sleep on the floor. They didn't have proper blankets or bedding or, you know what I mean? Yeah. And at one point, Robert was actually kept locked away for 6 months.
Fucking hell.
Quote, "All I can remember is beatings and being locked in a room. I was locked in a room for approximately 6 months. And depends on how my father felt, he would beat me, perhaps once, twice a day. I can almost still remember now, the key being turned in the lock. When he came in, he'd have a poker or a piece of wood in his hand, or even an air rifle. I can remember he burst an air rifle on me back. And when he beat me, he'd close the door, I'd hear the key turn, and he'd walk away laughing." So, from a young age, Robert has not only learned not to trust the people who, you know, you should feel safe and secure around, but he probably would have been socially stunted somewhat.
Yeah.
From this. Like, imagine being that eyesight to be locked away, not even just within your family home, but locked away in a room on your own.
Mm.
In 1970, at the age of 17, Robert ran away from his family home in Liverpool and went to London. His two older brothers had also ran away from the family home. Everyone's just like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Can't take it. While in London, Robert was living on the streets and he began abusing drugs, leading to his addiction. And at one point, while he was living on the streets, Robert was actually raped by someone he had associated with.
Fucking hell.
Now, during this time, Robert would support himself through sex work. He would meet his clients in various pubs and clubs throughout the West End. One of his clients was a 30-year-old construction worker named John Farrell. During their meeting on the 14th of March, 1973, John had showed Robert some pictures that he had with him. These pictures were of various children that he had sexually abused.
So he's had a rough going up to now.
He's had a very hard life, and understandably, Robert was infuriated and disgusted by this man. You also got to remember, he's still very young. So at this point in 73, he would have been 20 years old. And he's already had a hard life. He's been abused. So when you have this person coming to you and going, basically, look what I did. These are the faces of the people I did this to, you know? So, like I said, he was obviously infuriated and repulsed by this man. Robert fashioned a garrote out of his tie. He would then lure John into the bathrooms, where he'd strangle him to death.
Good.
Now, once he had killed John, Robert walked out of the bathroom, just leaving the body there. But Robert didn't run, and he didn't deny it.
Yeah.
He surrendered and asked for help. And apparently police began referring to John Farrell as Blue, as that was the colour of his body when he was found.
Okay.
It's like, I don't... It's kind of... No one pulled a muscle with that one, did they? It's, you know, lads, come on. Robert was held on remand before being deemed to have been unfit to stand trial and was sent to Broadmoor Psychiatric Hospital on an indeterminate life sentence. Now, while at Broadmoor, on the 26th of February 1977, Robert and fellow inmate David Cheeseman entered the cell of 26-year-old David Francis. Now, David Francis was a child molester. Robert and the other inmate barricaded the door and proceeded to beat and torture David Francis for 9 hours.
Fucking hell.
After he had died from the torture, the two men held the body over their heads, sort of like a trophy to show the guards who were watching on. They were standing outside the cell looking through, you know, the little like spy window. Just basically like, holy fucking shit. What do we do?
But where were they for the 9 hours?
This is what I mean. What was it like, understaffed? They weren't kind of getting around? Or was this one of those things where they were like, stand back. We don't want to fucking, you know, one of them.
It has to be. Yeah. It has to be, because I don't think they even get 8 hours sleep overnight. I'm pretty sure. So guards must have known and turned a blind eye. Had to.
After the guards are able to get into the cell and David Francis' body is examined, they see that during this vicious attack, a plastic spoon had been made into a point at the end and had been rammed into the ear far enough to puncture his brain.
Jesus.
His
head must have broke.
You would think. But I wonder, did they sharpen it down far enough that it's kind of, you know, it's kind of sturdy? There's not a lot of like movement in it. How do I describe that?
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I don't think that happened with a plastic spoon.
Well, apparently it did. His head was said to have been, quote, split open like a boiled egg with a spoon hanging out of it.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So this is where the nickname Hannibal the Cannibal and Brain Eater would later come from, because of the spoon in the head. But in spite of his new title, an autopsy discredited Robert's alleged acts of cannibalism.
Mm-hmm.
This was just rumours, but, you know, people love a good moniker, don't they? So after the murder of David Francis, Robert was convicted of manslaughter and transferred to Wakefield Prison.
Shaky wakey.
Every time I see Wakefield, I'm like, oh, Wakefield. Secondhand, you know, they say secondhand pride for Sheffield, secondhand embarrassment for Wakefield.
Fucking hell.
So now in Wakefield, Robert is surrounded by the people he detests the most. Child abusers and sex offenders.
Yeah.
No good. Again, understandably so, Robert was said to have never socialised with any of the sex offenders.
Mm.
And at this stage, Robert's attitude towards his attacks is somewhat positive. He was doing good, a public service even, in his mind. He had rid the world of another harmful person.
Yeah.
Now, pair that with the fact that he has nothing to lose now. He's in prison for life.
Mm.
He set himself a little task.
They're the most dangerous people around. Because they've literally got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
What else can you do to them?
Yeah. So, like I said, Robert set himself a little task.
Mm.
You got to keep busy in prison. Kill 7 paedophiles in one day. That was his goal, his aim.
Guinness Book of Records?
Don't talk to me about Guinness Book of Records. On the 29th of July, 1978, Robert lured 46-year-old Salni Darwood into his cell. Salni was serving time for sexual assault as well as the murder of his wife. Robert pulls out a makeshift shiv and stabs him in the neck. After he had killed Salni, he pushes the body under his bed, exits the room and enters the cell of 56-year-old William Roberts, another convicted child molester.
Yeah.
As William is laying in his bed, Robert walks over and begins his attack. He stabs William in the head with a shiv before repeatedly slamming his head into the wall.
That'd do it.
Yeah. And after this, Robert walks out of the cell, up to officers, where he places his shiv down in front of them and tells them we're going to be too short for the next roll call. Yeah, I wonder why he stopped after 2. My guess is that he didn't realise how fucking exhausting attacking 7 people one after another would actually be.
Yeah.
2, he was like, gotta call it a day. Fuck this.
Yeah.
In 1979, Robert goes to trial for the murder of Salni Darwood and William Roberts. He's sentenced to life.
Again.
Yeah.
So they're just acting the bollocks. What were the point?
I suppose from the point of view of the families, they've got justice. Well, maybe not Salni because he murdered his wife. But you know what I'm saying. Like, maybe it's that bad. Cut. Sorry. But you get what I'm saying. We see it so often where someone's gone to prison for life and people are like, oh, good enough. But there's the 3 other families who are there like, but we didn't get justice for our son, our daughter, or whoever.
Yeah.
You know? Home Secretary Michael Howard would later recommend that Robert never be released.
And did Robert say anything like, is there a fucking echo in here? I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Or, no, was it a bit of deja vu?
Yeah.
A bit of deja vu here.
So at this stage, Robert hadn't seen his family for years. After he and his brothers had left home, they lost contact.
Hmm.
But after his brothers had heard about what had happened, his brother Paul wanted to see him and try and rebuild their relationship. Even bringing his 18-month-old son Gavin to meet his uncle Robert. Now, Robert's family are said to be very supportive of him. Because they can understand, it's not that they're necessarily okay with what he had done, but they get what he went through and how it impacted him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to the murder of someone who's done something so evil, so twisted, so what have you, I think a lot of people can turn a blind eye, sort of,
yeah,
to the crime. Now, although Robert was now considered to be a serial killer, and with that title comes a lot of media attention. This case was never very well publicised in comparison to others, and the reason being was that the majority of his murders took place in prison. He only actually killed one person outside of prison. And let's be honest, people don't tend to give a flying fuck about inmates, really, do they?
Yeah.
But he did earn himself the title of Britain's most dangerous prisoner.
Well, now, that... What about Bronson?
No, apparently, he's officially...
I'm fucking certain Bronson has that title.
Well, maybe he had it before, but...
I know Bronson holds the record for pull-ups.
Fuck!
It's either pull-ups or push-ups. I think it's pull-ups.
Okay.
Like, Bronson's a fucking machine. We're not talking about Bronson, are we? But I'm telling you...
But they're in the same prison, aren't they? He's in Wakefield.
As far as I know.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're... Or at least they were at one point, yeah. I'm not quite sure where Bronson is now, but...
Yeah. Well, he's set for release and he wants to move to Dublin.
That's fine. We end up sending a lot of criminals over to the UK, so we'll take one of yours for all of our... Like, Larry Murphy's kicking it over in fucking London, I think, at the moment. In 1983, a specially designed cell was... Fuck. A special... Okay, give me a sec. Okay? A specially designed cell was erected for... I can't even get the line.
Oh, boy.
I didn't even... Like, I forgot that I'd used that word. This cell was... 5.5 metres by 4.5 metres in area with a bulletproof perspex.
Can you give me the measurements in feet? Fucking metres.
No, I can't. With a bulletproof perspex surround. So basically, picture Hannibal Lecter's cell in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
But this was the original. This was before that movie came out.
Okay.
His cell contains a table and chair made of compressed cardboard, you know, the old IKEA special.
Hmm.
A toilet and a sink, and the base of his bed is, you know, some of those like concrete slabs.
Yeah.
Robert is allowed out for 1 hour a day and is monitored 24 hours a day under the supervision of 6 officers. And only those with maximum security clearance have access.
How did they get the cuffs on him? You know, if it's perspex all the way around.
Yeah.
So.
They'll have like a little latch to, you know, to give him his food and stuff like that.
Ah, okay.
So it'll be like, just feed your hands out.
Yeah, I know how it works.
Apparently you don't. Speaking about his living situation, Robert said, "I certainly have my moods, but they're unrelated to actual mental illness. They're more related to my circumstances and conditions." I mean, obviously from their perspective in, you know, the prison system, they're thinking we need to separate him from the general population. I understand that. But where it seems a bit twisted is that not only is this extreme lengths solely for Robert.
Yeah.
This cell is also located in the basement of Wakefield Prison.
Right.
He's completely isolated away. Like, it's so, do you know what I mean? It's so extreme.
This is where I think I'm going to get some hate. But this is where the death penalty should come into play.
What do you mean?
So...
You think... If you're going to go that extreme, why not a death penalty rather than torturing a person?
It's just costing the country money to keep him. Like, you've had to build this special cell. You had to do all this for one prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd have just offed him.
Well, obviously, then, like, you know, you can't in the UK. It's not an option.
That's what I mean. But that's where this should be able to come into play.
Mm.
Because, like... Got nothing against the guy, I don't know him, but...
But are you in favour of the death penalty, or are you grey area?
It's very grey area.
Yeah. I'm the same
because
way.
Because I thought I was more pro to it than I am since Joseph Faraday.
I'm not in favour of the death...
Since hearing that, it was like...
Yeah.
Fuck.
I'm not in favour of the death penalty, but then I can't be so black and white to say that, because when I hear about, you know, the likes of... John Wayne Gacy type.
Yeah.
It's like I couldn't give a fuck about him being sentenced to death
mm.
because he's so evil. So I can't say I'm 100% against it. You know what I mean?
Gacy, he's the one who kissed me ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be hypocritical for me to just be like, ah, well, it's fine for him.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So yeah, Robert is completely cut off from everyone and everything, locked away in the basement for 23 hours a day.
Until the day he dies?
Yes.
See, like...
It seems like he's being somewhat targeted to me.
Yeah.
Robert has been described... Sorry, did you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, like, I bet if he had the chance, he'd top himself.
Yes.
Knowing he has to do this.
He's actually said that.
Oh, okay.
So it does seem like he's being targeted, and Robert has been described as living in a permanent state of unhappiness.
Yeah.
In an interview from 1982, Robert said, "There is evidence of mental deterioration. My speech has been affected. There is also a past welfare officer, Mr. Alan Murray, who has on several occasions written letters saying that he is deeply concerned in respect of my speech, which has only been affected since my time in solitary confinement."
Well, he was a scouse as well.
No, but I have to say, when I was listening, so I was listening to loads of audio clips of him speaking.
Yeah.
Some, like, you can hear him pretty clearly, but there are some words where I was just going back to re-listen to make sure I was getting the correct word what he was saying, because yeah, it's kind of a little bit almost slurred or kind of, you know. Since spending a considerable amount of time of his life locked away down the basement, Robert's appearance has been described as gaunt, emaciated, sunken-faced, with long, straggly hair. And at this stage, Robert has been down there for over 40 years.
Fucking hell.
Mm. In the same interview, Robert said about his situation, "One of emptiness, lack of hope. I don't appear to have nothing to look forward to. I always get a sense that no officer takes any interest, and I resent that, because they only seem to be concerned with opening the door and making sure I get back in as soon as possible. And every time I see an officer pass, I think, well, you know, you could just stop and talk if you wanted to, but he doesn't, you know, and it's thoughts like that that I think about most of the day."
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking to hear.
See, right, going back to death penalty. So the reason why they don't do death penalty in the UK is they think electric chair, gas chamber is inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging, inhumane. Firing squad, inhumane. What the fuck do they call this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just put him in a box for 40 years.
Yeah.
And counting.
Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Like, obviously being hung would be more humane than this. This is torture.
Yeah.
At least when they hang you, once your neck snaps, that's it.
Forensic psychiatrist Richard Badcock has said that Richard has an involuntary tic, which could be the result of a brain injury due to the physical abuse that Robert suffered in his early life.
Mm.
But with no record of any brain injury, he believes it may be more of a psychological issue. It's Robert's way of venting his anger or frustrations without having to put it into words.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sure, if anything, is only being made worse by the fact that he's being kept in isolation.
Yeah, yeah.
He's basically being forced to relive what his father did to him the years before, which he has said torments him. And like I said, Robert gave an interview in 1982, but he doesn't speak about his life a huge amount, and he's never talked in detail about the murders. Then in the mid-90s, he began talking to psychiatrist Bob Johnson. Bob describes Robert as intelligent, honest, articulate, interested, and well-read. And he was able to get Robert to somewhat come out of his shell.
Mm.
He said at one point during a meeting between them, he could see Robert starting to get agitated. And he said to Bob, "My palms are starting to sweat," and all of this. So Bob is like, fucking relax now, Robert, yeah, calm down. So yeah, Bob says to him, "I'm going to leave. If you frighten me, I can't help you." And that calmed Robert down. He realized that I need Bob to help me. Robert is clearly aware that there's something wrong and he needs to work through his issues.
Yeah.
During a meeting with Bob, Robert said, "What you're wanting to do, you're wanting to get into a room and feel the emotions of the childhood. But we realise there are certain hazards to actually doing that." So again, he understands there's an issue here. As soon as I bring it up, yeah, anger starts building, what have you. Bob believes that what Robert does is project the image of his father onto these people.
Right.
And basically he's killing them before his father can hurt him again.
Yeah, so it's a bit like PTSD.
Yes. Now, Robert does place a lot of the blame for his behaviour on his childhood. And he has previously said that if he had killed his parents in 1970, he wouldn't have killed the others. But I do want to say for Robert, he did seek help on multiple occasions beforehand.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like he was like, fuck it, I'll do what I want. It got to a certain stage and he wasn't getting the help and, you know, getting assaulted while he was on the street. So it was just constant reassurance that people are shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So clearly over time, Robert was not only acknowledging his problems, but wanting to work on them. And he was starting to figure out why he did the things that he did. Robert had even said to Bob during one of their meetings, I think we've had a good session, Bob, in terms of where the problem areas lay. So it's like he's excited to get there and kind of figure it out. And then in 1998, Robert and Bob's meetings were stopped, with little to no explanation as to why.
Why?
The higher-ups never really gave a reason for it.
So like, still no documentation on why?
Not as far as I'm aware. Bob has said that he's tried to get in contact with Robert multiple times since then, and he's only received one reply, which was a handwritten note that simply said, all alone now. It seems very strange to me. Why do they so desperately want Robert to be cut off from everyone and everything? Yeah. I understand, again, the segregation from general population, but why don't you want him to get psychiatric help?
Mm.
It just feels as though he's being treated as some kind of an experiment, you know?
Either experiment or they just see it as lost cause. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah. His brother Paul has spoke on this and he said, as far as I can tell, the prison authorities are trying to break him. Every time they see him making progress, they throw a spanner in the works. He spent time in Woodhill Prison. There he was getting on well with the staff, even playing chess with them. He had access to books, music and television. Now they put him in a cage in Wakefield. His trouble started because he got locked up as a kid. All they do when they put him back in there is bring all the trauma back to him.
Mm.
In the year 2000, Robert had asked for the conditions of his solitary confinement to be reassessed, failing that for him to end his life. He'd also asked for a pet budgie, but he wasn't allowed.
So in year 2000, how old would he have been?
47.
Okay. Wouldn't even let him have a budgie. Richard Speck got fucking animals.
Robert said, the prison authorities see me as a problem, and their solution has been to put me into solitary confinement and throw away the key, to bury me alive in a concrete coffin. It does not matter to them whether I am mad or bad. They do not know the answer and they do not care, just as long as I am kept out of sight and out of mind. I am left to stagnate, vegetate and to regress. Left to confront my solitary head-on with people who have eyes but don't see, and who have ears but don't hear, who have mouths but don't speak. My life in solitary is one long period of unbroken depression.
I do actually feel bad.
This is a very heavy one, you know what I mean? Because it's... Right, I feel like some people might listen to us talk about some of these cases and think, oh, why are you so understanding towards these people?
But that's what's going to...
Put yourself in their shoes, but that's also what's separating us from the people who are doing those things. Can you have compassion and understanding? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're never going to learn anything from cases like this if we can't take a step back and look at it from an outside point of view. I think it's a very interesting case as well, because a lot of people have sympathy for Robert, like we just said. You know, the men he was killing were doing unspeakable things.
Yeah.
The worst of the worst. Where my issue is, I have a big problem with the whole vigilante thing. It's such a slippery slope, you know. To take matters into your own hands, it's very fucking dangerous. You know what I mean?
Like, I get what you're saying. But again, put yourself in his shoes. Say if you're in prison and you're in for life. You're not getting out.
Mm-hmm.
But there's someone in there who's... a paedophile. Mm-hmm. Sex offender, paedophile. They're getting out in 2 years, 3 years. Like, you're stopping it from happening again.
Mm.
You know, it's a hard one to comment on. But yeah.
But I think a lot of people feel that way. A lot of people feel that it's somewhat justified because they're such bad people.
I will never, ever understand how someone can go to prison for life for murder. Doesn't matter what the circumstances are, really. 90% of the time, if it's murder, if it's first degree murder, you're not getting out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, rape, child molestation, they're never life. Never. Mm-hmm. Why aren't they classed as serious or more serious of an offence?
Yes. I mean, I agree. I view sex crimes as the worst. Like, torture or sex offences, it's the whole prolonging someone's pain and suffering.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, whereas in the eyes of the law, murder is final. That person's gone forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, you know, and...
like, to put a lighter note on it, and I'm being deadly serious here, I would sooner be stabbed than spat on.
I know what you mean. Yeah, it's the whole absolute outrageous fucking disrespect.
Yeah.
To do that to a person. It's so hard to comprehend how you can want to do it to a person. But in the same argument of arguing, you know, like I said, my point, we brought up in the Jodie Plouchet episode as well. I have an issue with the vigilante thing.
Mm-hmm.
We need to stop. And we've seen a hell of a lot of that over the years, the last few years, of people trying to take matters into their own hands. And they're actually prejudicing cases.
Yeah.
And doing damage to the system. But with that said, what the system are doing to him, to Robert, it is so fucking insane and inhumane.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Yeah. You know what I mean? So.
They're just as bad.
Yeah. Now, like we said earlier, the Home Office have officially named Robert as Britain's most dangerous prisoner. And he's also Britain's longest serving prisoner in solitary confinement. And as it stands now, Robert only has contact with three people, his brothers Kevin, Paul, and his nephew Gavin. His family have said that what is written about Robert in the media compared to who they know personally is night and day.
Yeah.
He's not the monster that he's often portrayed to be. In letters to his family, he talks to them about TV shows that he's watched, or he's recommending movies. Apparently, he fucking loves David Attenborough.
Who doesn't?
Especially the Brits. Yous go fucking hard for David Attenborough.
Yeah, we do.
Robert also talks about his love of poetry and art. In one letter he sent to his nephew, he refers to Nazareth House, where he and his brother spent several years. Quote, "We do try to have a good time when the Three Musketeers are together. And that goes back to the 1950s when we're all together at Nazareth House. And at least felt safe from physical harm, and to us, it felt like our home. And while there was no actual physical, tangible love, we were at least clothed, fed, and dressed to a degree, and able to act like children, and not be punished for it." Like,
yeah,
fuck me. That's the case of Robert Maudsley, and I do apologise if I've gotten anything wrong. There's a lot of... between different sources, there was a lot of conflicting information. I tried to weed it out a bit. As with what his family said, you go to one article and they paint him in a way to be this sadistic monster. You go to another and it's more, you know, kind of what we were saying, the more compassionate understanding of this person's condition, and you know what I mean? But there you go.
Fucking, like, that one is a rough one.
That one fucked you up.
Yeah.
I thought telling that to you, you would have... well, actually, well, you did have a bit of discussion on it, but I thought you would have more opinions, whereas I think you were a bit more just in shock over that.
Yeah.
And like I said, I know you're like, oh, fucking Liverpool's ages away from me, but like, it's not that far from you, really. And you didn't know about it.
I've been
it's
to Wakefield Prison and I didn't know about it.
Isn't that crazy, though? Yeah, like he literally lives in the same area that you did at one point.
Yeah.
And you didn't even know because it wasn't that well publicised. I know, like, a lot of it happened before you were even born, but you'd think there would have been somewhat from the area talking about it. I don't know. I think I've just depressed the shit out of Neil, and I'm sorry to the listeners if I've done the same to you. It was a very heavy one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go and watch American Pie or...
can you, like, bring your energy up? You're very...
I'm sorry, but that... it's rough. Like I said, it's inhumane. Like,
it's very hard to talk about it knowing that he's sat there right now.
I think it's actually brilliant that I started the episode talking about how humane we were to not use the crossbow.
Yeah, actually, fair point. Yeah, sorry, I fucked you over here with this one. Really stepped on your point, didn't I?
Fuck the Brits.
He's finally turned, lads.
Well, before I forget, we got a shout out. So Rhonda got a new patron. Got Rhonda.
Rhonda.
She's joined the Mortal Army.
It's not the Mortal Army. Stop trying to make it happen, Neil.
So yeah, we really appreciate it.
We do.
And we're currently working on our extra content. So there'll be more information about that soon.
Do you know, you keep saying this. I don't think anyone believes it's ever going to fucking happen.
No. No. When I say we're working on it, we're actually recording. And we've made graphics for
Are
it.
Are we? Look as if I'm not there. Oh, okay.
So we've got a couple of segments we're working on. We've got one called, I think it's going to be a fan favourite because we've had it requested by a lot of people. So we've got one called Neil's Nuggets because they want to hear me tell a case to Megan.
Well, we've already recorded the first one and Neil did very well, I thought.
I did well.
I know you were nervous, but you did a really good job. It is hard to...
She says I did a good job, but there was a couple of important information I didn't even jot down.
Well, the thing about it is when Neil's telling the case, one of the initial names you had for it was like Neil's Adventures on Wikipedia. Ha ha. It's like just silly because Neil doesn't like researching. He doesn't do that side of it.
I don't read.
So the fact that he was doing it was meant to be basically what a lot of people do after they've watched a documentary. They quickly jump on their phone and Google, and what's one of the first thing that comes up is Wikipedia. People quickly read through that. It's basically Neil doing that and having a laugh because...
Why not?
Why not?
The next one is Don't Be Dumb. So that could be...
More petty crimes.
Yeah. You know,
gobshite criminals, people acting the bollocks.
Yeah. And then a third one we're working on is Knock 'Em Back with Neil and Megan.
And that's going to be more just general chit chat.
Yeah.
Bollocksology.
Yeah. We haven't recorded that yet because we haven't been in the mood to drink.
Mm.
So yeah, they're the ideas we've had. And again, thank you, Rhonda. We really appreciate you. But on that note, we need an auditor. A good one.
Okay. You ready?
Lift me up.
I'm not going to lift you up at all.
Mm.
Coffin births.
For fuck's sake.
In 2010, the body of a woman was discovered in Imola, Italy. It's believed the woman was between the ages of 25 and 35 and had died in the 7th or 8th century. As they investigated the grave, they noticed that between the woman's legs is the skeletal remains of a fetus. So, they're looking at this and they're like, all right, what's the crack here? Are you okay?
Why? What?
We'll get into it. They were thinking the same. They're basically, I'm sure they were looking at each other like the way you're looking at me, just a mixture of devastation and blank bewilderment. How in the name of fuck did she give birth post-mortem?
Buried her alive.
No. They were unable to determine the sex, but could estimate that she'd reached about 38 weeks into her pregnancy at the time of her death. So the head and the upper body of the fetus were outside, but the legs were still inside of the mother's body.
Well, nothing would be inside because it's a skeleton.
Yeah, but at the time, from the placement of the skeleton, they could see. Don't try to confuse me, Neil. So yeah, what's the sus here? It's called post-mortem fetal extrusion. This is when gases have built up, causing the body to expel the fetus through the birth canal. And it is rare, but it does happen. So we don't have full... Are you okay? Because you're...
No, so I think I've just come up with something that's going to help a lot of women.
Please, Neil, right. Share with the rest of the class.
So obviously a corpse didn't have to push.
Mm-hmm.
It was the gases.
Are you
going
to tell like a woman to drink a load of pop?
No. But I think we could make a fortune here.
Oh, God.
So this is patent pending. So you get the woman who's heavily pregnant. She's 9 months. Yeah?
Yes.
Sit her on the bed.
Okay.
In the stirrups.
Yes.
With the clasp thing. With the, Oh, we don't even need that. So you put her in the bed, in the stirrups.
Okay.
And then put a tube down her throat and pump gas in. to push the baby out.
That's not the same organ it's feeding into. That's going into the digestive system.
Huh?
Or lungs, you're aiming at, I assume, rather than...
All right, so you find a way of making it go into the womb.
Okay. So you have to go up.
Well, not if you cut a belly.
So you're wanting to do like a C-section, essentially.
But you wouldn't have to... Yeah, yeah, but this is the beauty of it. You wouldn't have a massive scar.
This is some hostile-sounding shit right now that you're describing to me.
Okay. I thought I was onto something.
Well, you work on that. Good luck finding a fucking volunteer. So, yeah, we don't have full information on the ins and outs of this, as it hasn't been replicated in order to learn from it, understandably. Well, I say understandably. Neil didn't even know what the next line was, and he's already saying we should try this and figure
I'm already on the blueprints.
Yeah, we... Oh, my God. We have only learned about this from when it's just happened to have been discovered.
Yeah.
There was also the case of a woman who was hanged in 1551. And
bollocks. Don't talk shit. Don't talk shit. I know what you're going to say.
Well, it's 1551, so it's reported. It's, you know what I mean? I wasn't there.
It's mythology. You're going to say...
Bollocksology, some might say.
You're going to say they fucking dropped the gangplank. She dropped and the baby came out and the baby was hanging by the fucking umbilical cord while she was hanging.
No.
Oh.
So like I said, she was hanged. 4 hours later, her body was still hanging there.
I always thought they let him down straight away.
Gibbet, mate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so 4 hours later, body's still hanging. Two fetuses basically just fell out of her. And, I'm sorry, there's no good way to say that. Excreted from the birth canal.
Oh. They fell out of her.
In 2005, the first modern-day case of post-mortem fetal extrusion was discovered. A 34-year-old woman was found dead in her apartment of an overdose. She was 36 weeks pregnant at the time of her death. She was found with the head of the fetus protruding out of the vaginal...
Grow up.
She... It just sounds so disrespectful to talk about a person like this. Imagine being found like that. She was found with the head of the fetus protruding out of the vaginal opening. So, yeah, how's that for some nightmare fuel?
Horrific. That's fucking horrific.
But it does happen. You have to learn about these things.
Why do I? It's not going to happen to me.
No, but do you not find it fascinating?
No. No, that is the last thing I find it.
Oh.
But I do think it's fascinating, but I might have come up with a way to make labour easier.
I can't believe you even said that when it was the next thing I'd written down, saying that, like, obviously we haven't tried it, we haven't replicated it to see how it works. And you're like, so what you do is you lay the woman down, you put her up in the stirrups. Like, what the fuck?
Just an idea.
How does your mind work?
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.